Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for March 2009. I'm your host, Don Cameron, of Cameron & McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. The economy of China is booming as a legitimate manufacturer of goods sold throughout the world. But China is also perceived to be one of the world's largest manufacturers of counterfeit goods, in part due to an immature enforcement regime. Jeffrey Lin is an intellectual property attorney and licensed U.S. patent attorney based in Lovell's Shanghai office. Jeffrey's intellectual property law practice began in Palo Alto, California, and continued in New York City. Since joining the Shanghai office of Lovell's, his practice is focused on contentious and non-contentious intellectual property matters in China and the Far East, and he has litigated numerous high-profile technical patent cases in China. He is also fluent in Mandarin. Jeffrey has also acted against counterfeiters in China on behalf of audio manufacturer Bang & Olufsen, as well as on behalf of Apple. In China, Lovell's has done anti-counterfeiting work for companies as diverse as Sony Computer Entertainment Inc. and Johnson & Johnson. Jeffrey spoke with me from his office in Shanghai, China. Good afternoon, Mr. Lin. Thank you for participating.
Thank you, Don.
Mr. Lin, China has been perceived, I think, by those in the West as being soft on counterfeiters to the point that it's almost impossible to stop them. Is that still the case in China, or is that a misperception?
Now, the perception that there is a counterfeit problem in China is accurate. There is a lot of counterfeiting going on in China, but no, I would not agree with the perception that it is impossible to fight counterfeiting. Honestly, it is impossible to stop counterfeiting because it is worldwide, because it is an economic problem that counterfeiters make a lot more profit from counterfeiting than from running legitimate businesses. And the resources that are put in play to counteract them are not on par to their investment in counterfeiting. That said, in China, there are mechanisms in place, and there are ways to deter counterfeiting and to fight counterfeiting. If you have a straightforward case, you will win your case in China. If you have a straightforward knockoff and counterfeit case in China, you will win. Two, it is important, though, that you focus on forum shopping, what forum you bring your counterfeiter in. There are local protectionism problems in China, but therefore choosing your venue is very important. And you have a number of different options available to you.
In terms of the options, I take it that there's a civil remedy in China for trademark infringement. I wonder if you could talk about the what you've done in that area in terms of enforcing rights in the courts in China.
The different options you have in China, there are four main options for anti-counterfeiting. There are civil actions. Well, let's start from the bottom. There are administrative actions, civil actions, criminal actions, and customs actions. Civil actions are where the right holder applies to an administrative body which administers your particular type of right. So therefore, for trademarks, it's the Administration of Industry and Commerce. For copyrights, it's the National Copyright Administration. For design patents, it would be the Intellectual Property Organization. Then you apply to these administrative bodies, and if they feel there's a clear case, they will actually go to the infringer's site and inspect. Now, they can make the Administration of Industry and Commerce, that does trademarks and unfair competition, they can seize products. The other bodies, they can make decisions and make orders stating whether infringing goods are found, but they have less powers to seize product. Now, in civil actions, then, you bring a civil litigation similar to what you'd bring in the United States or in Europe for infringement of IP rights. Criminal actions, then you have to go to police organizations and make your case, and you need to meet certain thresholds of find any evidence of infringer sales of infringing goods to reach the level where the criminal police organizations in China will take your case. Customs, just to round it off, is where you register your intellectual property before Chinese customs, and in particular ports of Chinese customs. And there they are more proactive in the sense that if they routinely check shipments and find infringements, then they will hold them and will notify the IP right holder. In that case, what you need to do, though, is you need to do training with customs to explain to them how to identify counterfeits. And if you do have particular information of infringing shipments, then giving that to customs will get you more results. Spot checks, there's just so much shipments that come in and out of China that spot checks are very random. Now, getting to your direct question regarding civil litigation in China, it is a similar process to the West, in which you would gather your evidence and you would bring it to court, establish your IP right, establish your case of infringement, and establish your evidence of damages. Straightforward cases in China, the difference in China then in relation to common law countries, especially the United States, is discovery is very limited. There is nothing like U.S. discovery mechanisms. The burden of proof is very high, therefore evidence gathering is very important. Now, for straightforward cases, as I mentioned, courts do come out with infringement. It is not, if you have a straightforward case and you prepare it correctly, you gather your evidence, you will win the straightforward cases in China.
Now, I understand that you have civil remedies similar to those found in British countries, such as the Anton Piller Order, which has sometimes been called a civil search warrant. What kind of use have you made of those types of orders, and perhaps if you could just explain their nature and how you get them?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Don. Well, in China specifically, you have the ability to apply to the court for something called the evidence preservation order. And there you're asking the court that, you know, it's not a general discovery request as you would have in the United States, but it's more of a focus request telling the court that, you know, the infringer should have particular documents or evidence, for example, sales documents, so that you can substantiate your damage claims, sales records, information on their suppliers, information on their customers, so that you can then pursue other infringers. Now, when you mentioned Anton Piller in Hong Kong, which is a similar request, but is more powerful in the sense that if the judge grants that request, then the attorneys for the IP right holder actually go to the defendant's premises and search for relevant documents. It's a lot more powerful than the evidence preservation order, because even in China, even if the court grants the order, the court themselves will go down to the infringer's site and look for documents. But if the infringer does not comply or is not helpful or responsive, there are few options the court has in terms of sanctions, and they generally don't apply sanctions. Now, that also brings up a point of coordinated action. We do strongly recommend that IP right holders consider coordinated action when enforcing or implementing anti-counterfeiting measures. For example, the Hong Kong case, which you're talking about, or using Hong Kong procedure, is often effective. We've worked for many clients both on the China side and in the Hong Kong side, and have coordinated those actions. For example, we had a seizure of a container of goods in China, and once we found that seizure, we got evidence of infringement in Hong Kong. And so in Hong Kong, we got an Anton Piller order, and we froze. Using the Anton Piller order, we got bank accounts from the infringers' operations in Hong Kong, often where they coordinate their China actions. We then used that Anton Piller order, and we got additional information, for instance, the bank accounts, and enough evidence to use in China again for criminal action. Therefore, we in Hong Kong were able to get Anton Piller orders and then freeze assets of infringers in Hong Kong, use that evidence then for criminal action in China. In a way, you need to have a multi-point strategy so that you can close the loop on infringement, because now in our current economy, infringement is often international and multi-pointed rather than one single point, such as a small factory in Shenzhen.
So what sort of strategies do you use in going after counterfeiters? Do you hit the retailers? Do you try to go to distributors, back to the manufacturers? Or what would be a good target, as far as you're concerned, for counterfeit enforcement?
Counterfeit enforcement is complex. It is something that companies need to invest in and to commit to. And the strategy really is that you need to apply, the strategy we recommend is to apply a ramped up approach to counterfeiting, in the sense that we mentioned the different options you have in China with the administrative, civil, criminal, and customs. You also obviously have the first level is the cease and desist or warning letter. Now, we recommend investigating the infringement and looking at and trying to find who are behind the infringement. So therefore, you don't necessarily just focus on, don't focus just on the number of seizures you get or the number of raids you do or the number of retailers that you sue, because you do ultimately want to get the information that you can use against the coordinators or the masterminds behind the different sales, behind manufacturing thousands of goods or tens of thousands of goods and distributing it, rather than going to a retailer and seizing 500 or 1,000 products. That said, it is a wrapped up approach in that you don't want to only go after masterminds. You do want to go after small level retailers and infringers to deter and put out there and the knowledge and publicize that you are enforcing your IP. The wrapped up approach that I mentioned is that your anti-counterfeiting should be respective to the level of counterfeiting that occurs. If you can catch someone, our experience is that if you can catch someone early in the life cycle of their counterfeiting, early in the extent that they haven't invested that much in your counterfeiting your product, there's more chance that you can stop them or deter them from counterfeiting you with a lesser tool. For instance, if you catch someone who is just putting up on their website, we are going to advertise infringing Bang & Olufsen earphones. For instance, we do work for Bang & Olufsen, and there they haven't really sold much product. If you send them a cease and desist letter or you do administrative action, that may deter them. They may say, hey, you know, this is not worth my time to be infringing. I don't want to have to be dealing with these cases. Now, if you go further and the infringer is already tooled up a manufacturing plant and is making these products, then you will probably have to go with civil action, because for them the economics now are, I've invested enough, just having a raid or sending me a warning letter is not going to scare me. It's just the cost of doing business. But if you go with the civil action and you can get to real damages, then again, they may consider stopping. And then further on, if you have a very internationally coordinated infringement, you may require criminal action, all of which, you know, we've acted on, and all of which you need, the core to it is information. So information, invest in getting your information, finding your masterminds, going after them, but also making sure you have a deterrence policy in place and implement it and publicize it so that infringers realize the company I'm thinking of infringing, I might not infringe that guy because it's just not worth my time. It's just the cost of doing business there and the hassle is just too high.
What you mentioned the AIC and the customs group, what government departments or agencies have been most helpful in pursuing counterfeiters in your practice?
As I mentioned earlier, the AIC is one of the most helpful departments in anti-counterfeiting, in the sense that they are empowered to seize product. All of the different administrative bodies have the power to investigate and to release opinions on whether infringement was found. But the AIC particularly has the power to seize goods, and that will have a deterrent effect. But again, that is dependent on the level of infringements. For instance, if you go and you seize 10,000 products from an infringer, you know, they may have already gotten a shipment out previous month of 100,000 units. So, you know, they'll take the hit and move on. But that said, AIC is helpful. The courts as well, as I mentioned, if you have a straightforward case, you will win those cases in China. What you need to be conscious of in litigating in China is which forum you litigate in. We generally recommend Beijing and Shanghai. Shenzhen is all right. Some of the smaller localities which have less experience with IP cases and are closer to the infringers, it's more challenging often to win cases there. So the courts can be helpful. And then finally, we have run a number of criminal cases effectively in China, and we have found the police can be very helpful. The challenges there, though, are inherent, you know, I think, worldwide, that you know, police authorities often do not put intellectual property or enforcing intellectual property actions high on their list of action items. They have limited budgets and manpower, and that applies in China as well. So you need to bring a compelling case to criminal authorities if that's the case you're going to bring. And generally, having a case where there's some kind of health or political issue in play helps bring your case to the criminal authorities. For example, I'll give you an example. There were criminal actions, investigations conducted against a counterfeit baby milk powder or milk formula. There are criminal actions brought against counterfeit glucose test strips. These are more often the case counterfeit criminal actions that are taken. But you should look at AIC is helpful for low level courts. Pick your jurisdiction, pick your forum, and then criminal, but develop your case.
Now, as I understand it, the IP law in China is only about 20 to 30 years old. And what would you say have been the major positive changes that have occurred in the area of IP enforcement in China in recent years regarding counterfeit products? What's the biggest change that you've seen?
In anecdotally, what we've seen, a positive change in recent years, is courts' greater willingness to award higher damages. Traditionally, damage awards in Chinese courts is low. You have awards ranging from about $5,000 to $50,000 is usually what you're looking at, which is fairly low. That said, though, recently, in December of 2008, a new case came out called the Neoplan bus case, in which a German company sued a Chinese company for infringing their design, counterfeiting their design in buses. And generally, the auto industry in China is very protected. They have a lot of clout. But in this case, the Neoplan bus company was awarded 20 million RMB, which is little less than $3 million, and that was a good result for them. So damage awards are increasing, and that is a good trend. One of the developments in the recent amendment to the patent law, which will come into effect in October of this year, is that statutory damages, and by that it's not the same concept as in the West, that it's a one-to-one. If there's infringement, therefore this is a damage amount, but statutory damages, in that if damages are difficult to calculate or there's insufficient evidence, courts are given some guidance. And in the previous patent law, that guidance was 50,000 RMB, which is maybe about $7,000, and now that guidance has been increased to 100,000. The guidance was, it used to be 500,000 RMB, and then now it's extended up to 1 million RMB, so you're talking about $70,000 was increased to $140,000. So there is an increase in damages that are being awarded against infringement, and that's a good trend. Those are the trends we are seeing in China. We are seeing application of the laws. And also, one of the good trends that we're seeing, the positive changes, is that courts are getting more experienced in IP cases. They're getting more experienced in adjudicating IP cases. And that will help the IP right holder that has a established case.
Are you seeing more non-Chinese IP owners being more aggressive in protecting and enforcing their IP in China?
Well, anecdotally, we have seen IP rights holders, foreign IP right holders, increase their registrations of IP rights in China and also do so more robustly. We do see an increase in actions in China. Now, one of the points that I did not cover in some of the answers to some of the other questions is the hijacking or the IP hijacking problem that exists in China, and it's very problematic. In China, it is not difficult to register IP. The systems are all in place to make your applications. And unlike the United States, it is fully a first-to-file system in China, meaning that if the party files first, by and large, they get the right. It's very hard then to oppose or take that right back. There are some mechanisms. But the anti-counterfeiting, the hijacking problem in China is that many times, and we've dealt with this this case often, is that Chinese companies, they'll go out and look at international brands that haven't explored China for budgetary reasons, for whatever reasons, or just as an oversight, and they'll go and register intellectual property of those foreign right holders, oftentimes similar to the cyber squatting cases we saw in the United States many years ago. Now, that can cause a big problem, and that also brings the corresponding recommendation to clients that I can't encourage more strongly, is that register your IP in China. If you consider China being a market for you to either manufacture and sell, or if you see it as a jurisdiction where someone may counterfeit your products and make and then distribute your products to China or internationally from that base, you need to register your IP in China and register it robustly so that you can fend off any IP hijacking cases. It's very important that that registration point be brought home and be invested in, some investment be made in China in that sense, because registration is a part that you do have control over, and it is an early part that you should invest in. And getting to cases of foreign litigants bringing more IP cases in China, we do see an uptick in foreign litigation, foreign IP rights holders litigating in China. And I think that is an uptick in registration. And I do think that is partly based on the fact that more companies are realizing that China is a big part of their business expansion plans, or there are a lot of competitors coming to China and manufacturing in China and then distributing worldwide. So it is important for them to bring cases in China, and they are bringing cases in China. Even international companies versus international companies, we're seeing that as well. So the take-home point there is that for companies that are not that large, still consider registering your IP in China, because China is a focal point, and it's becoming more and more so. So that in your business strategy, if China may develop 5-10 years from now, you should still register your IP now, because you, by that time, if you wait till that point, you might not be able to register that IP. You might have been hijacked.
So in conclusion, what advice would you give to non-Chinese intellectual property owners about protecting their intellectual property in China?
The main point, and I recall one of your earlier questions was what is the strategy, right, and what is the advice? And the main point we want to recommend and bring home to right holders in China is to be committed to their anti-counterfeiting efforts and to invest their resources in it. Counterfeiters invest a lot in their counterfeiting efforts. The only way to stem that flow is to also invest in anti-counterfeiting and to be committed to it. It isn't something that you can run one or two cases and be happy that your counterfeiting problem will go away. The companies that we have worked with that have had success in anti-counterfeiting, in decreasing the amount of counterfeiting sales that they see, increasing their and then results in seeing their own sales increase, have invested in putting people in place, coordinators in place. Oftentimes you'll have IP managers in China. You'll work with external firms. You'll have buy-in across your corporation. And you will invest in obtaining information, coordinating and sharing it, and using that information. So the first thing that we recommend is making that investment. I guess I need to backtrack a step and saying the first thing that you do need to do is to register your IP. You need to have it in China before you can use it. You have certain rights that you can utilize in China without registration, copyright, unfair competition, but for your trademarks and your design patents, you need to go register it. We often have, and many IP practitioners have clients come to us and ask us, well, we have these counterfeiting problems and they're very severe and they're ripping us off. And we say, oh, great, you know, we'd love to help you, you know, take action against these problems. And what IP do you have? What IP have you registered in China? And the client says none. And that is a first stage you need to be conscious of. So in kind of a summary of the advice is really register your IP, right? Commit to anti-counterfeiting and invest in it. And then there's a third point, act. Take actions in China. There is a perception that actions, as you mentioned in your first question, Don, that China's soft, that it's impossible to stop counterfeiting in China, but you need to act. If you haven't used the system, it's hard to criticize it. We have worked in the system, and you can get good results. Two other suggestions that we do have is the new idea that we've been developing is in China, you can, when you do bring a case in China, you can apply to the court to freeze assets of the infringer. One of the challenges in China, besides the actions themselves, is enforcing your judgments against infringers who will, you know, close up shop and then reorganize and set up a new company to infringe. We'll move bank account information. One of the ideas that we've been working with and we have had some success with Chinese courts and with infringers is you apply to the court when you start a case, after you start a case and you establish your basic facts, to freeze the assets of the infringer. And to do so, your reason here is exactly what I mentioned, is that once we get further in this case, and it's an ex parte application, once we get further in the case, it's very likely that the infringer will move their assets and will make enforcing judgments very challenging. So you apply to freeze assets. What you're required to do then, first one is provide your case on why there's justification to do so, and then two, post the bond. Now the bond is usually the same amount of the assets you freeze, but we recommend doing this in that for almost all businesses, cash flow is king. I mean, especially in our current economy, you hear it all the time, cash is king, and it definitely applies to counterfeiters as well. So if you go in and you put a 500,000 RMB or I'm saying $75,000 US dollar bond in there and you freeze their assets, it's more likely than not that the counterfeiter will come to the table and say, look, let's settle because I need to unfreeze those assets. And we have done that for clients and with success, it's played out in those ways. We've gone to the court, applied to freeze assets, posted a bond, the infringers come back and come to the settlement table and said, hey, you know, we need to settle. And I need to unfreeze some of my assets. Or in one case with one of the infringers, they ended up settling for the full 500,000 RMB or about 75,000 US dollars. They just wanted to make sure that, you know, hey, I don't want to get my assets frozen anymore. And they worked with our client on ways to, you know, commitments that they would not infringe them. So that's a suggestion. And then finally, another suggestion we do have is that to make sure you do focus in your anti-counterfeiting efforts on both going after the coordinators of counterfeiting, not just focusing on your seizure numbers, but also making sure you have a deterrence plan in place so that you are going after both the big fish and the small fish so that you are attacking the problem at both ends. So just to finally recap on that suggestion and advice again, register your IP in China, commit to anti-counterfeiting and invest in anti-counterfeiting in China, and finally act.
Thank you very much for your insights, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Don.
My guest for this podcast has been Jeffrey Lin, counsel with the Shanghai office of Lovells. For further information on Jeffrey Lin, the law firm of Lovells, anti-counterfeiting in China, and information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You have been listening to Jurisdiction, the International IP Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.